Welcome to the El Arpa podcast, the home for cultural chit-chat in and outside Madrid. People will talk. And another thing that gets me so wound up about those revisionist historians. That's why we haven't had a podcast in 2 weeks, is because I've just been stewing in a corner thinking about it. Well, anyway, that's neither here nor there. I am back for the El Arpa podcast. I am flying solo again today. Oh, wait.
You're not.
Wait, what's that? Why?
Let me.
Come in. Who? Barry. You're back.
It's me.
You look brown and windswept and Egyptian, carrying tea and what's that? Trinkets you stole from tombs. You hid past customs on the way home. Wow. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
Have you listened to the podcast?
Of course I have.
What do you think?
With my pedaling internet.
I know.
It was really good, but not as good as when we are together.
I don't know. The numbers actually were a lot better when I was doing it on my own.
All right, so you can continue.
So I've kind of like resigned myself to this being a good podcast, but the numbers have been really bad. What was missing when I was doing those successful podcasts? I don't know. Anyway, let's just forget about it. Whatever that common denominator was. So you're back. We're sitting in a car again, and did I tell you about those revisionist historians?
You might have mentioned once or twice.
Okay, so we're going to go to a movie.
Yeah.
Do they have cinemas in Egypt?
They do.
What do they show?
Movies.
What kind of movies?
Old ones.
What kind of old movies?
No, there wasn't a cinema where I was.
There's no cinema, no?
No.
Okay.
Well, it was a small place.
Small place.
Yeah.
In Cairo, what are they showing in cinemas right now?
Oh, in Cairo, well, probably the same. Well, action movies, there are a lot of Arabic movies.
Yeah.
Bollywood movies, yeah. Actually.
Yeah. You know, I heard that. Have you ever heard of the movie Face Off? John Travolta, Nicolas Cage.
Sort of sounds familiar.
Is it true that in Egypt that was called Fez Off?
Oh, dear me.
Hey. Scar horn, bad joke alert. Well,
I think Turkey would have worked out with it.
Ah, yeah, of course.
Wrong country, but fair enough.
Okay, before we can proceed to part two,
yeah,
I'm going to need to hear like a bad pun for a movie title, and I want you to tell me that's what they're showing in Cairo cinemas.
From me?
Yeah. Tell me something Egyptian.
Pyramid.
Oh, actually, they're showing on movies. They must be showing My Pharaoh... Lady. There. For example. Well, I liked them. So that's, well, you know, it was better when you were gone, the podcast. Okay, so, sorry to say that to you, but it's true. I'm just joking. Welcome back. Okay, so, what's the movie we're going to see?
Loving Vincent.
Loving Vincent.
Yes.
Is that the real title or is that like an Egyptian pun?
No, that's the real title.
Okay, what's
it? Van Gogh.
Really, what's it about?
Van Gogh.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yes, which I don't know in English what you call him, Van Gogh or whatever strange.
Yeah, type I call him Van Gogh as well. So,
yeah, okay.
What's the centers on though? Who loves him?
Who loves him? Everybody. No, I think the people that actually painted the artwork that features in the movie are the ones that love them. I'm not sure it's actually the people that are. Sharing the life with him.
So people he painted in his paintings. He painted the paintings of these people.
Yes, and then some modern artists recreated those paintings.
Oh, really?
To make them into a movie.
Okay.
The concept is very interesting. It's the first time it gets done.
So say that again. I wasn't listening. I was thinking of the next part of the podcast.
You kidding me?
Your face is a thousand pictures right now. Mm. Why is it interesting? Say it again.
Because, like, it's well, they use basically modern artists have recreated his paintings.
Yeah.
In order to provide the characters for the story that the movie talks about, which is his life story. Well, kind of like his life story, but also after he dies and, you know, all the sort of mysteries around him.
Well, you know, there's a French painter who was responsible for the French national anthem, La Marseillaise. He painted people he knew and loved as well. And then some of them ended up dead because of the revolution. So, not always a happy ending when you're a part of the painter's paint.
What was that? Because I was thinking of the next part of the podcast.
Oh, really?
Yes, I missed it.
This needs a lot of work, this dynamic. This has been, it's been too long.
Yeah, it's been too long.
It's been too long. Well, all I say is I never left. So, that's the end for Acrimony. Okay, so that's the end of part one. Musical interlude. See, I was free from these constraints when I was in the podcast without you. I was like, no.
We don't actually need them, you know?
Yeah, well, okay, well, we can talk about it. Not during the movie, though. You like structure. Okay, so this is part one. Over. Musical interlude. Back with part two, which will be an in-depth review of Loving Vincent. Who, why, where, how did they love him? And also a little bit of talk about Egypt. And then we'll do part three. So, talk to you in a bit. So, how green is my Valley of the Kings? Nile sisters for Nile brothers. And more Egyptian puns for old movies. Speaking of movies, where have we just been?
We've just been to watch Loving Vincent.
Where are we now?
In the car.
Part two. Part two of the show.
Oh, part two.
So, get that right. Well, let me know, what are your impressions of this father of modern art?
Well, I was very pleasantly surprised. To start with, we have to say the title was not for the reasons that we thought.
Not much loving going on.
No, just that it was
barely any tantra.
It was indeed. It was just the way he signed the letter.
Love Vincent.
Loving Vincent. That's what he said. Loving.
I didn't get that.
Do you not?
No.
Yes, you did.
I didn't.
Oh, well, he was.
Oh, wow. Jesus. You learn something new every day.
Yeah.
Yeah. And who was Vincent?
How do you mean? The actor?
No.
Who was he?
It was a musical biopic of the singer Vincent McMorrow.
No, Van Gogh.
Ah, fuck. Where is my mind? Sang the Pixies and I'm saying right now. No, obviously it's about Vincent Van Gogh. I didn't make that connection, but then, you know, I was thinking of other things. So, it was better than you expected. Mm-hmm. So, why? Can you just walk us through why it was superior to your preconceived ideas?
Well, I just thought it was quite an ambitious project. You know, the idea of animating kind of like the part of, well, the part of his story after his death when, you know, they're just trying to work out what happened to him. And I wasn't sure how it was going to work because it's based on letters and correspondence between various other characters, including himself. So, I don't know, I just thought it was going to be quite hard to string it all together. And I thought it was, like, quite well done.
Obviously, they reference a lot of his paintings. The artwork is done in the style of his paintings as well. So they very cleverly weave those pictures together, and they might focus on one aspect of one of his paintings and then expand or zoom back the camera or move the camera and it becomes another scene altogether. And the way the light bounced around and the way the paint strokes were vibrant and living, gave a elusive quality to what you're watching on the screen as well. So it was a marvel to look at, and how even the long shots, the distant shots, were different from the close-ups. The close-ups sometimes, well, were just like a painting animated, but the long shots seemed more painting-like. And how they dance between something that was fixed and artistic and moving and artistic, and then with the flashbacks that seemed almost more real, kind of ironically, because flashbacks are looking back, but I think they used the technology that showed maybe the more modern kind of style in those flashbacks, for example. So I don't know, maybe they're playing around with the idea after he was dead, he became a modern icon. Pretty sharpish. So I don't know. So I don't know what the thinking was behind that, but the way they danced between those three ways of shooting and animating it was, I think, quite intriguing. I don't know how they animated it, because sometimes it did look like it was just like the real actor, but with a filter, for example. Other times it looked like it was pure animation. So I don't know. Perhaps you can give some insight into the animation side of things.
Well, I just know at first the person who directed it sort of. It was an artist and sort of painting it all basically just herself, but then she realized she had to give the different photograms to different people. Mm-hmm. So it ended up being like 120 artists or something.
And
like
she realized the paintings were already done anyway, no?
Yes.
Okay, good.
But
imagine painting all the paintings, like, oh fuck, they've been done. And better.
But well, I don't think the idea of using actors was in the first... I think the idea was to animate it completely, but then it turned out to be like quite complicated and quite difficult. So
yeah.
So I think they resorted to having, some actors to at least to make some sections smoother, because otherwise it would have been really hard to animate the whole thing, you know,
of
from
course.
Scratch.
Filling
the gaps.
If they really wanted to do it, I'm sure. They could have found a time.
Well, it was a long time ago that I saw this project, and you know how they did a test and how they animated a couple of paintings, and I remember sending it to you.
I think it was production first started in 1989. Berlin Wall came down.
Yes.
Spirits were high.
Yes.
And people wanted to capture the essence of this.
You were totally
2 years old.
But I remember sending the piece of news to you, because at first it was just like just the idea of animating a few paintings, and you know, and it was just a website, and then people really got behind it and sort of developed into this project.
And it is very well written. And surprisingly written in some respects, but I'll focus on the kind of more direct positive thing that I can say about it. Near the end of the movie, they talk about how, you know, you're obsessed with his death. One of the characters says to the guy investigating it, but have you ever thought about what he did in his life? And so this movie is primarily focused around solving the mystery of how he died, but of course ends with a huge nod to his life and how he lived his life, and in his life afterwards, how it took on this grander scale, and he became the icon that we all know and loving Vincent. I'm loving Vincent right now. But also as well, it was part Midsummer Murders, part murder mystery. And obviously it's based on the letters, very well researched. So what is happening and what is being said is a very true and very accurate depiction of real events. But it did seem like a scene after scene sometimes of like just confrontation, and this guy who didn't know what he was doing, obviously kind of like bumbling into like accusations like a half-cocked Inspector Clouseau or Miss Marple after not taking her pills. No, that's unfair, but like it has that edge to it, but then it's a story obviously about something a lot bigger, and as I said to you off microphone, it's a story about suicide as well, and the questions that inevitably arise from that act, and how those questions are never answered. And those questions haven't been answered in the case of Vincent van Gogh, and even things like that are famous incidents from his life, such as him cutting off his ear. Even though it was only last year that they discovered kind of more information about that situation, for example. So there's still mysteries there. Maybe more things will come to light eventually, but probably not, because a lot of it was very carefully documented in the letters he sent to people. And the wife of his brother, Theo, published them obviously after the Butt brothers died. So probably not that many left mystery-wise, but but I think just like show how human and how terrible suicide can be for those left behind. And it's a story imposed on someone that we know as a very famous character, so I think it made him very human, obviously. But it's something that affects a lot of people even today as well. So even as a sideline, it kind of shows the after effects, the aftershocks of this final action that a person can take.
I couldn't have said it any better.
That's why I said it.
I know. Yeah. This is how it works.
Exactly.
Well, I think that's true. And I focused on the bit that you said about how we didn't know that much about his life, and it was interesting because I think some of the stereotypes that have gone down in history were presented there. And obviously when there's not much information about somebody, everybody's life feels seen, and especially when it's somebody with, you know, a character that is a little bit against the flow. So well, I just...
Yeah. No, that's true. Yeah, but sorry. Yes, go on.
It's okay. I like the fact that there were some characters that knew him better that were kind of like presenting aspects of how he was kind to people, kind to children, how he was, you know, quiet but pleasant, and
yeah,
it was just nice to like have those, you know, how he was very tidy, which is something that for some reason people wouldn't expect from somebody who's very creative.
Well, even the things that were bizarre, maybe, was, you know, his furious writing, but he just had a huge work ethic and just a drive, and knowing the details, the biographical details of his life, his lack of luck with women, with jobs, the kind of distance he felt between him and his parents, particularly his father. And they go into this through the letters quite tenderly at the end of the movie, but how he wanted to show that he had some kind of value. So like that kind of drive, it came from, well, he suffered from synesthesia, which was where your senses all get intermingled, and also when you're a genius you probably do have this kind of superhuman drive, but also when you have a point to prove, this is a cocktail that would push someone to be living in a very sensitive way. And the way he lived his life, noticing light and these moments, you know, he's not the only artist to do it, so he's definitely not alone, but it is a very beautiful way to kind of view the world, even though perhaps ultimately he was also disconnected from other people and from other things. Which is interesting because there's another podcast, the Blind Boy Rubber Bandits one, he talks very often about how you shouldn't attach your self-worth to what you do, because ultimately it would be very destructive. But I think in Vincent van Gogh's case, Vincent van Gogh, this is what happened. He didn't attach who he was through his art, but then again, it's a very personal expression of how you see the world, so I think there's good points and bad points to that. Raises so many questions, even things like about outsider arts. You know, there's another podcast, Potter Rooney, interviewed Brent Pope. If you're Irish, you know who this guy is. He's a New Zealander who's a rugby analyst on Irish television. But he also likes arts and held loads of art exhibitions for outsider art people who are homeless people or people with mental illness, who aren't generally like parts of the artist community, and traditional artists would kind of not look at them in a nice way, for example. And so Vincent van Gogh, even though he wouldn't be seen as outsider art now because he's so established, part of the establishment, that's who he was as well back at the time. And even now there's people who are outsider artists and they suffer like social stigmas and everything, so like his story is very relevant in lots of ways. And another point I want to make before I pass the mic back to you is that, like, I was at his museum in the Netherlands in Amsterdam with my sister at Christmas last year, and you know, it struck me as very funny that they try to downplay his depression in terms of his artistic output, but then again, the doctor in the film mentions how you can go from up and down, from melancholia to happiness and depression, back to happiness again, and perhaps that's what happened there, in the letters he was kind of up and down, and I don't know, maybe they want to downplay depression because maybe they're ashamed of it, or maybe they don't know how to treat it properly in the museum, or perhaps they think, well, he wasn't always like that, he wasn't always depressed, he had his up swings as well, so I don't know. So it's an opening question, I don't know the answer to it, for example, but like there's a lot of debate about, I guess, how much it affected him. And obviously the museum, the Van Gogh Museum, have come down on the side of, well, not so much, you know, towards his final phases of his life. So I don't know you know, what to say more about that. Who knows the answer to that? It's a big mystery of his life as well. So I don't know. Those are the questions that would come to my mind when considering this piece, this movie, Loving Vincent.
Well, I don't know. I think, like, a lot of the time a big case is made out of, you know, trying to work out whether the mental state affected the artist, things like that. But in reality, for me, it's just, it's not altogether like that strange that you're having, like, literally, you know, somebody who's very sensitive to everything, who's very sensitive to, like, the world around him, and, you know, who notices details a lot. And I think we've talked about it before in other contexts, you know, that, like, people that have, like, capacity to, like, be moved by details, by things that people don't normally see, also have more of a, you know, they're more prone to getting down sometimes, or, like, you know, to being, like, affected by things.
Well, yeah, but also, you know, he did suffer real failures, though. Successive romantic failures, successive professional failures, and of course, his whole life was lived to the spectrum of being an artist, and he only sold one painting out of 800 or something in his lifetime. So, I mean, no matter who you are, I think that's going to knock you off your stride, a little bit at least, if not more so. So, I think, you know, aside from being sensitive, and he was, his life wasn't easy, and he was constantly poor, and he relied on the charity and love of his brother, who also wasn't, you know, flush with cash either. So, like, if you, and you come down to, you know, I heard a statistic today that, like, 17 million in the UK, in terms of savings, have only 100 euro or 100 pounds, as it were. So if you're in a situation where you're in an economic cycle that you can't get out of, lacking money, and perhaps you've also mixed in with feelings of shame because of poor family relationships, or because of professional failures, or what you perceive to be professional failures, then it's, again, it's a powerful cocktail that can, I think, really affect anyone's mental health, you know. So the idea is, like, he expresses things that we can identify with in beautiful paintings, but he's a real flesh and blood person that experienced very real things that, again, that people can go through today as well. So, you know, as I always hark back to in this podcast, but, you know, things in the past very similar to things that that can happen today to people today.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I mean, I think it's a mixture of the two things, you know.
Yeah.
Like, there are two dimensions to it. The one that we're saying, that, you know, obviously if you're particularly sensitive, you can notice more things more, or be affected by things more, for the good and for the bad. But then there's obviously the practical dimension, and, you know, kind of like not being able to make money, or not being able to sustain what you do, or be appreciated for what you like doing, is obviously something that knocks people down, anybody, you know.
Exactly, yeah. But yeah, of course. But then, of course, you know, I don't know how affected he was, or how eccentric he was, you know, because he's a historical figure, so there's only so much we can know. But again, you know, he's seen as a lunatic who cut off his own ear. So,
yeah.
You know, so, but, you know, things like this movie, I think, can help humanize a person like him, tell more of his story, and show as well how much he was missed. Maybe he would never realize it himself, but how much he was missed when he did kill himself. But aside from that, though, it is a very beautifully filmed and very beautifully put together movie. And to look at it is absolutely amazing as well. So, I don't know.
No, I would agree. Yeah. So all in all, I was quite happy with it, because, well, it was, like, aesthetically pleasing, which is always nice.
Yeah.
And it was original, and I think it just taught you about an aspect that is not usually explored about a famous artist. So you know, just for that, to make you look at things in a different way to what you're usually taught, I think it's worth watching.
Of course, yeah. Yeah, that's it. Recommended. 2 thumbs up, 4 thumbs up, just 2 of us here.
Yeah.
So, anything else you want to say?
No, I think we'll move swiftly on to part 3.
To part 3, okay. I don't think anybody can hear you there when you softly whisper. So where are we going?
Part 3!
Okay. She croaked. Yeah. Is there any movie you can think of with Aswan?
No, but I'm sure you can.
I can't.
Oh.
That's where we're going, to Patry. So, thank you for sticking with us for the first two parts. This is the final part, part three. So, as you can see, well, here, the Leopard Podcast is back to its usual standard and its usual duo. So, we're being very busy at the moment, organizing a huge TED Talk style at the end of March. More information on that. Also, could potentially be translating some things, making how to speak Spanish videos and all this kind of stuff, and also doing this and that in terms of writing, translation, and producing videos. So, anything
and
else?
And tours.
And tour of the tour, yes. Audio guides.
Yes, but we're not going to talk very much about that in case someone is still already.
Okay, but things happening, no?
Yeah, lots of things happening. Like, we can't catch up with all the things that we're doing.
We gave a... not having to do that, we're in the same country. Anyway, we had our first tour. It was a smashing success. And the more the merrier. That's all I say. So on to the next one. And we'll give you more. Shut up. More information as that comes along. So anything else you want to say?
No, no.
Okay, I'm going to clean the spit off the microphone now after we both laughed. We both guffawed quite uproariously there just a moment ago. So that look... We should do video podcasts, because that look you give me is priceless. It's a shame that people can't see it. So, well, anything else?
No, nothing else.
Okay. You know what? Look up the Danish word hygge or hygge. H-Y-G-G-E. It's a word that means the warmth you feel when you're around a fire and with friends, for example. So that's one word that doesn't translate into English. I've been teaching that this week. So take a look for yourself of words that can be translated into English or don't have an equivalent exactly in your language. There are a trove of things. But anyway, that's an aside. So do you want to say bye-bye?
I'll say bye. I have a Spanish word that cannot be translated into English.
El puto amo.
No.
What is it?
Merienda.
Merienda. That is
yes.
True.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Fancy that.
And puto amo. So, okay, well, thank you for saying goodbye. I'm saying... bye as well.
Bye.
So bye. Bye bye. See you next week.
Bye.
The Alarpa Podcast, the home for cultural chit chat in and outside Madrid. People will talk.